You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
The NBA trade deadline, it's been wild, especially if you're a Utah Jazz fan. I still think Jazz fans are celebrating 72 hours later after acquiring Jaren Jackson. Last night was a huge night. There's a couple of moves I really want to get in depth with on our next guest. That's James Holas, who joins us each week to talk some NBA basketball. James, always love chatting with you. And as you and I were talking before we actually hopped on air, this is one of those trade deadlines that lived up to the hype, lived up to the billing. It's been busy.
Yeah, man. Every year is a different one, but we all get excited for it, and some years we're kind of disappointed. A lot of little moves around the edges or whatever, but it's been actually really active and some big names. I was out and about yesterday. I wasn't on my phone, really, so I caught up on trades that happened last night today, and it kind of made my head spin a little bit, right? So really curious to see if there's more, any more big booms before the deadline here in a couple hours, but so far so good.
Yeah, as far as the some of the smaller trades, we don't need to get into that because we would sit here for 2 days if we want to talk about all the smaller trades. But I do want to start by talking about the Golden State Warriors, because last night the Jonathan Kuminga saga came to an end. They moved Kuminga. And honestly, when I look at this trade for the Golden State Warriors, I don't know how good of a deal this truly was. All right, so Atlanta decides in the offseason that they're going to go with Trae Young and Kristaps Porzingis. This is going to be their next, step forward, right? They're going to build around these two. 7 months later, both of those guys are gone, and now you have Porzingis in Golden State. And I guess it makes sense from the standpoint of Golden State, really. They want to stretch five, right, that can protect the rim. They get that, but with the Jimmy Butler injury, I don't know if addressing the five spot was the right idea here for the Warriors. I'm curious as to your thoughts on this deal.
So I feel for both. You know how they say a good trade is when, obviously a good trade when both teams come out feeling happy, right? This is like the opposite of a good trade, but I can't call it a bad trade, right? Because it's really head scratching on both sides. For the Warriors, all of the drama around Kuminga and all of the back and forth. And this is what you trade him for? Like, it's crazy because someone raised a good point. They could have had this exact same trade a couple years ago from the Wizards. Because Porzingis, Boston got Porzingis out of the Wizards. But, they could have definitely got him probably for less from the Wizards a few years ago. So, the Warriors almost waving the right flag. Where maybe they're saying, hey, best case scenario, this is going to really work out, right? There's one, like a lottery ticket where this might just hit with Porzingis, because he does. He can fit the Warriors ethos, right? They can play five out. He's great at punching mismatches when he's healthy in the post-up. He's a quick trigger on the three-point shot shooting and not afraid to put him up, and he's a good shooter. But he just hasn't been healthy, and he can't stay on the court. So as far as Kuminga, listen, we know the potential, and I guess Atlanta's at the point where they're moving up for Trae Young. Turn the page. They got another athlete. They got Young. They got a guy who has sky high potential, and they got a couple years, I guess, to see how it turns out. So for them, it's not a bad trade, but it's almost like moving around the deck chairs on the Titanic.
I like the deal for Atlanta more than I like it for Golden State. And I also think that when you look at what the Warriors have tried to do over the last couple of years, I give them full credit. They weren't ready to completely turn the chapter, right? Completely turn the page on this just devastating era for other teams, right? I mean, we're talking about a dynasty here in Golden State. They've done everything they possibly can to remain relevant within the NBA championship circle. Hasn't necessarily worked out, but I don't fault them for just staying back and letting their stars age like milk and not competing, or at least trying to not compete. I give the front office a ton of credit for that.
Who was that, the Warriors?
Yeah.
I mean,
they've tried. They've tried. You got to give them credit. They've tried.
That's like giving the firefighter credit for trying to put out a fire that he started himself. Because look, the time to trade Kuminga was 2 or 3 years ago. They knew that he didn't fit. Right? He never fit. Right? They tried to do the two timelines thing. James Wiseman was an absolute failure. Moody has been a nice role player, but that's a lottery pick that you got. Who's playing 22 minutes a night or some nonsense? So cool. But Kuminga, they've had dozens of offers. They could have had Markkanen. They could have had we can go list all the trades that they've passed on because they said, we don't want to trade Kuminga, or some more pods too. So, sure, you could say they tried, But I don't think the way that they tried, it was I hear what you're saying. You have the glass half full look. I'm probably being a little more pessimistic.
Well, I remember about a year ago, right, when they made the deal for Jimmy Butler, and I remember texting you that night. We were kind of floored at that deal. Very curious to how this was going to work out. And now, obviously, without Jimmy Butler, they're trying with Porzingis. I think you nailed this right on the head, though, when you take a look at Porzingis. You know better than anyone, seeing him in Boston, right? When he's out there on the floor, it's a great idea. But, I mean, that's what he's there for in Golden State, right? He's a stretch five. That's what they need him for.
For sure. But, you know, Boston needed him in the playoffs last year, and he couldn't he for whatever reason. I know he has some things going on that are ongoing that they're trying to deal with health-wise. And maybe he can get all the way past that, but he hasn't been past that yet this year because he's been dealing with it. So, just to see, you got an asset like Kuminga that at one point was actually, you know, could have netted you a real return. Jimmy Butler, again, he's dead money on the cap sheet because he's not going to play probably until next December. He's already, 36, 37. We know he's going to be dealing with a lot. The last few years, you know, he's going to miss 20 to 30 games, and he has his regular season mode and playoff mode. So, you can say that Draymond is getting every day, looks a little bit older. Kerr, he's trying to set the franchise. He wants to set the expectations correctly. We told everyone, hey, you know, we're fading dynasty. We get it. And that's what we're seeing. And I'm going to enjoy every second of it.
Again, James Olish joining us right now as we talk NBA trade deadline deals. Yesterday, we got to talk about this one a little bit on the show. The Dallas Mavericks moving on from Anthony Davis in a deal with the Washington Wizards. Dallas is going to acquire Chris Middleton, A.J. Johnson, Malachi Branham. They get Marvin Bagley. They get a few picks, one that's heavily top 20 protected from Golden State. They get a few second rounders. Washington's going to get Anthony Davis, Jaden Hardy, D'Angelo Russell, Dante Exum. And, James, I know in hindsight we're going to look back and say that this is one of the worst trades in the history of the NBA. I'm talking about when the Mavericks acquired Anthony Davis, moving on from Luka Doncic. My biggest issue with this move yesterday for the Mavericks kind of goes back to when they fired Nico Harrison at the beginning of the year. You gave up on a generational player, and you didn't even attempt to see if the vision was going to work. You didn't even give it a chance. This right here was just a go-away type deal, although you did get more first-round picks for Anthony Davis than you got for Luka Doncic, so I guess give him credit on that.
You know what, man? Again, I respect that positivity of giving them credit for anything, because what an absolutely atrocious piece of franchise malfeasance. To have a player like Luka Doncic, you know, arguably top three, and some will say the best player in the offensive player in the league, one of the best offensive talents in his prime, and all you get for it are Max Christie, and who else do you say they got from them?
You get Chris Middleton, you get A.J. Johnson, you get Malachi Branham, you get Marvin Bagley. Yeah, that's it. That's what you get for him.
It is an absolute joke of a move that will go down in history, and the further we get away from it, I don't care if Luka never wins a championship. Just as a player and what his numbers are going to be in his accolades, it, you know, to go from Luka in the finals to this, less than a year later, is, you know, a year and a half later, is absolutely insane to me. Or, you know, almost 2 years later, I guess, but that's still absolutely insane. And I wouldn't, maybe the NBA should step in and talk and investigate the Dallas franchise, because something's just not right there. So, yeah, and it also speaks a lot about Anthony Davis, right? A couple years ago, best shooting big man, won a championship with LeBron, top 10, top 12, 15-type player, and now we don't know what he is, right? And I guess this might be a career-defining, you know, arc for him, where can he hit the ground running and actually do some things with Washington and turn that franchise around, be part of something positive, or, you know, is it going to be street clothes Davis and, you know, the slings and barbs following him until he retires? So
he's not going to turn Washington around.
Let's turn them around to like a winner, a contender, but at least positive, right?
Yeah, sure. The problem here with Washington is you're putting your faith into Trae Young and Anthony Davis. These guys don't play. They don't play. But James, I do want to go back to what I said about the Mavericks a moment ago, because again, you talk about the league should probably step in and investigate. You're not far off on that. What I continue to go back to is when you decided to sign off on the Luka Doncic deal, you knew there was going to be backlash. You knew what he meant to the city. You knew this, right? You knew what he meant to the franchise. And you still signed off on it. from an ownership standpoint. At that particular time, you have to, A, be able to take the criticism that you were going to get, the incredible backlash which came. I don't think they fully anticipated what was going to come. But B, you have to be able to at least see out the vision when you allowed Nico Harrison to make that trade. That's the misstep here. That's the biggest misstep of all. I think 2-3 years from now, we can look back and say, oh my God, they traded Luka for Anthony Davis. They got absolutely nothing out of it. They weren't better. It didn't work with Kyrie. Like, we can throw all that out there, and that's fine. But they didn't even give it a chance. You just gave it away. You get Cooper Flagg, which was a gift from the NBA, and everything else, it's just been awful. You have to at least see the vision through. That is right to me. Outside of trading Luka, that is egregious.
And I completely agree. This is what happens when, this is what happens when you have non-basketball people getting a basketball team and trying to run it in a way that's not the way basketball teams are ran. I think they thought they were ready for what they were doing, and then the fan backlash came from trading Luka, and they obviously, you know, they folded, right? They blinked and they realized this is more than we thought, and then I think they reversed field because I'm almost positive they were in lockstep and they let Nico do that and they said, okay, we're ready. They weren't ready. And there's also the conspiracy theory that this is a team that's maybe trying to not be the best from the ownership point of view because they want that team to be somewhere else. I'm not going to really push that conspiracy theory, but I've heard it from enough people that, you know, maybe there's smoke and fire somewhere. But, sure, Cooper Flagg has been a wonderful consolation prize, and he's something for them to build around for years forward. He's going to be a Kemp Holt type player. But they put him behind an eight ball because they could have got so many more assets by doing this in a more judicious way and figuring what they're doing.
Let's move on and talk about the Cavs and the Clippers. This is a deal that I simply don't understand. Maybe you can make some sense of it. I don't know why any team in the NBA would want James Harden on their roster. So the Cavs get Harden. They give up Darius Garland in a 2026 second-round pick. The reports come out that Garland and Donovan Mitchell didn't like playing with one another. All right, Donovan, let's see how much you like playing with James Harden, because guess what? He's quit on nearly every team he's played on. And we can go down the list, right? I don't think it's just a fun thing to do anymore, to hate on James Harden. There's just not a lot for me to like when we take a look at what surrounds James Harden and the drama that comes with it and the lack of success topped with everything else. I hate this deal for the Cavaliers. I hate it.
I do too. I don't hate it because I hate when we have to do this, but we're doing it. I know me and you've done it before. On paper, it makes them incrementally better. It makes them better because Garland wasn't playing, and when Garland did play right now, he's hampered. He's that turf toe's been really bothering him. So it makes them better in the short term. But me and you, we understand. I think holistically, James Harden has proven himself to be kind of a front runner. He's fine. He'll play. He'll have his good games. But when the rubber meets the road and you need him in the playoffs, he won't be found. He's proven this over and over again. And this is not a knock on him as a person or the player. He's a fine player. He's great, top 75. He's also 10 years older than the guy they traded him for. We also know he's all about his money. He's shown himself. He's one of the most brazenly selfish players I've ever seen, where he puts getting his next contract ahead of anything else. Even he said it himself, right? I think he had a quote about how, sure, I didn't request a trade, but I feel like we have a better chance of winning Cleveland. He's a front runner. He saw that the Clippers, all right, I have a better chance to win there. I'm going to go there. He's ring chasing, and he wants his contract. So the numbers will look fine. It's going to be a tough adjustment. I know that the team really likes, they love Darius Garland. He was drafted there. He's part of what they've been doing for a few years. So this seems like a huge step forward, and they're turning the page to another chapter of the Cavaliers ring chase, which obviously we know this is now we're on a really short fuse, right? They're already maxed out money wise. They're paying a lot of money. Owners don't pay a lot of money for teams that don't contend. So I think we have a year or two to see. Can Harden lead these guys to a ring? And I think we already know the answer to that.
I think they have LeBron James next season, and I don't know how much that helps. But you look at this core, to me, the writing's on the wall, right? So that's going to be the story next year. Like it or not, it's going to be fascinating to watch. If you have Donovan Mitchell, James Harden, and LeBron James all on the same court, I'll watch.
I guess if this was 6 years ago especially, but, I mean, I don't want to see 42-year-old LeBron, 37-year-old James Harden in a fat suit, and then Donovan Mitchell, you know.
No, you want to watch. I just don't think you want to. I think it's morbid curiosity at that point.
I'll tune in, but James Harden to me is one of the most he's not fun for me to watch, right? I think a lot of people agree with that. I understand he's a wondrous scorer, but just his playing style is not, like, there's nothing entertaining about watching him do it. So, and honestly, 47-year-old LeBron James getting that way with me too. But, you know, you're right. Cleveland's in some kind of end game. I heard that Jared Allen's on the table now, right? Obviously, Evan Mobley should be the one guy who's untouchable, right? The linchpin moving forward. So, yeah, they're going to try to take another bite at the apple. My big thing I'm going to keep saying about Cleveland, they are missing that grit. They're missing that one guy who's willing to go toe-to-toe with somebody else and maybe get a little physical and toe the line between dirty and, you know, hard playing. Obviously not hurting anybody, but they're missing that kind of attitude. They've never had it. They're too nice of a team.
Let's talk about your Celtics for a moment. They make a move, and I think it was a logical move, right, considering who they sent out. But the move was to bring in some front court help. They land Nikola Vucevic. Your thoughts on this deal and what this means for Boston?
As much as I've had fun watching Anthony Simons, I knew we all have to keep our logical brain here. The whole point of moving Drew Holiday was to get save tax money, and they literally tried to move Anthony Simons last summer to save more tax money. They finally did it. They found the trade that they wanted. They're going to save some money short term, and if Vooch wants to sign for a reduced salary next year, cool. If not, they're going to save even more money. I know that that's the whole plan. We know that Tatum and Brown are the money makers. That's where they're hitching the wagons to. So I love the move. They needed it. I don't think they needed another big man, but they needed that more than maybe the scoring for Anthony Simons. Prince is going to move back to the bench probably. Him and Vucevic off the bench are going to be amazing. So in the short term, I think Boston's going to keep rolling. I think that I'm going to say Coach Joe Mazzulla should be the coach of the year from he's turned what he had into this, or, you know, one of the top teams in the East. So I'm excited to see Vucevic play and how Boston kind of maneuvers around him. Anthony Simons, better player than I thought on defense and, you know, whatever. So I think it's a really strong move for Boston because we're just waiting for Tatum to come back.
I got to get your thoughts on the Utah Jazz deal before we get you out of here. Jaren Jackson Jr. coming over. You and I have not had an opportunity to talk since then. I loved it. I thought it was a great day for the Utah Jazz. I know Jazz fans have got to be excited about it as well. The idea that this deal means they would move on from Walker Kessler, that proves to not be the case. But eventually, you've got to cash in those assets at some particular time. And so you acquire Jaren Jackson. And also in this deal, you get Vince Williams Jr. as well, which I really like. I'm curious as to your thoughts on the Jazz-Grizzlies deal that went down just a couple of days ago.
Me and you have spoken at length about the Jazz and what are they going to do, and Danny Ainge kind of spinning his wheels and trying to maybe keep a foot on both sides of, hey, we're a nice young team, but we're still tanking, right, and how blatant it was sometimes. I believe this is Utah finally saying, okay, we're picking a path. They went all in. I'm not the biggest Jaren Jackson Jr. fan. That salary is ridiculous, but he is, a recent Defensive Player of the Year. A modern big who shoots threes and defends the rim. Like, for a player to put beside a guy like Laurie Markkanen, you can't find a better match. We know that Keontae George is really taking a giant step forward to the point where I can't feel he got to push the franchise to say, you know what, we've been doing this churning through rookies thing and trying to get draft picks. We might have our guys. Let's at least move forward and try to win some games. So I'm really excited to see them. They've had some really good games even before they made this trade. They've had some really big wins this season, and they've looked really bad at some times. So this is going to really raise their floor. And moving forward and into next season, they have flexibility. They're going to add some more players. I think the Utah Jazz fans can take a deep breath, sigh of relief. I think things are going to start heading upwards for them.
Laurie Markkanen, Jaren Jackson Jr., you talked about Keontae George. We're going to say Walker Kessler is still in the fold. We'll throw in Ace Bailey. You throw in a couple of other pieces. Can this be a 50-win team next season? Because I feel like if you bring Walker Kessler back and you're looking at what your salary is going to look like, you've got to be a 50-win team. That's a lot of money to not be hovering around that mark. Can they get to 50 wins next year?
I understand exactly what you're saying, and that sounds probably like the best-case probability. Now, they are in a very tough West. There are other teams that are good and going to get better. Fred VanVleet back in Houston next year, and you know another year of seasoning with Kevin Durant, who's still rolling strong. San Antonio Spurs are only going to get better. The Thunder aren't going anywhere. So it sounds really easy to say, can they win 50? But the West is a dogfight. But there'll be a team that's going to be competitive. You won't see a lot of 30-point blowouts for the Jazz. You won't see them get embarrassed. You won't see embarrassing guys, you know, guys getting sat for no reason. So that's something to look forward to. So let's say even if they go 500 next year, 41 or 41, which I think they'll be better than, maybe like 45 wins. 50 is a lot. That's a big season. But I think no matter what, you're right. The accelerator has been pushed. But I don't think it's pedal to the metal yet. We're not going to. I don't think 50, 55 is in the purview yet. But it's coming.
James Hollis again taking out the time to join us. James, before we close out, is there anything we missed? Anything that we haven't talked about Giannis? We didn't even get to that yet. That's how much trade talk's going on in the NBA. He's staying put in Milwaukee. Let's end with that. Why not? I believe this is the right call for Milwaukee. As you and I have talked about over the last couple of weeks, if you move a player like Giannis midseason, I don't believe you're going to get anywhere near. You're not going to get full value for him when you move him anyway. But in the middle of the season, teams don't have the ability to completely revamp a roster, especially a contending team that would want to acquire Giannis. You do have a little bit more flexibility in the summer. Seems like this makes sense for everyone.
Absolutely, man. It's just like the Bucks and Giannis have been so awkward about all this, right? Keep it in-house. Have a united front, whatever you're going to do. But just the way how public they've been, Giannis' agent talking to the front office, and Giannis said, I can't control that. And then he's open to a trade, but he didn't request a trade. And the Bucks were, Shams is catching all kind of heat because he reported that they were going to move him by the deadline. And obviously Giannis and the team came together and came up with something, so now they're not going to move him. So it's like a very a couple that fights very publicly, but then you see them together the next weekend, and you're like, what are you two doing, right? So it's right there, and you're right. It makes more sense to trade him in offseason, but all of the Sturm und Drang around him has been it's almost embarrassing for the franchise. Another franchise front office I think needs to maybe have a little overhaul because they've handled this poorly.
James Hollis, always kind enough to join us here to talk some NBA basketball. James, before I let you go, let's talk about where we can find more of you.
Scottie Pippen was my favorite player growing up, so I have a social media handle, at Snotty Drippin, where I talk about basketball and make jokes and stuff about Temecula. You guys can find me on all platforms, and we can, I'm not even that interesting anymore.
Nah, you're still pretty interesting. You're still pretty interesting. You crack me up on social media. Plus, it's always good basketball talk, and we need more of that in the world today, right?
But you're my friend, so thanks for fibbing to me. I appreciate it.
James, I appreciate the time. Let's do it again next week.
My guy. Thank you, man.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. We're going to be back. We'll do it again tomorrow. Same time, same place. Do not forget, coming up tonight, we get some high school basketball. Carbon and Emory squaring off on the girls' side of the court. Live coverage is going to begin at 6:30. Tip-off will follow at 7. Be safe. We are out.